welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. My name is Peggy Ployer, and I'm the host of this weekly broadcast put on by Sped Homeschool, as well as its founder and CEO. We at Sped Homeschool empower families to home educate children with learning challenges, and I encourage you to check out our website at spedhomeschool.com to learn more about the resources and support that we offer families. Some of the best resources we have, of course, are our partners, and today we are highlighting one of our partners, Home Life Academy, and their partner organization, as well, which you're going to learn a lot about, called the Homeschool Care Foundation. And so today I have Trudy, Abel, and Phyllis Laro with me. And I'm just excited for you ladies to share. We had a pre-interview, and we could have filled a whole hour just talking with the stuff we were going to talk about. And so I'm excited to have you with us. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules, grandma schedules, to make time to pour into our audience.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Absolutely. And this month we've been talking about homeschooling, just when you're out in different places. And so this is going to be a really good wrap-up broadcast, podcast, because these ladies have a lot of experience, and they're going to share with you maybe some of the places that you have hesitations about doing this, and where they've homeschooled out and about, how they've done it, and kind of some tips and hints, and some wisdom, I guess, from their homeschooling years. And so I'm excited for you ladies to share and just encourage our audience in this area, because there's so much to learn outside of books. And and I know you're going to be blessed by the time that these ladies share. So I would just love, as we're kind of getting started, for both of you to tell us a little bit about your homeschooling journey and briefly how your family incorporated learning out and about in your schedules. We'd like to start.
All right. I have two sons, Josh and Jake, and around second grade, my oldest son, Josh, as a special education teacher, that was my background. Mm-hmm. I realized right off the bat, he had dyslexia. Sort of a mild case, but he was, his numbers were backwards and upside down, and his letters, and he was having trouble with phonics. And so I just took him out of school. And I took his brother out too, so that he wouldn't be by himself, so that we could homeschool. And based on the research, just, I knew it was important to teach them using all kinds of experiences and all senses, multi-sensory kind of instruction, and very active, hands-on, engaged. Boys, so they needed a lot of
exactly
a lot of activity to keep them engaged. So I started homeschooling them, and just based on the fact that I needed it to be active, and textbooks were very much a struggle at that time. I just went with a thematic approach. So I started, there's a lot of curriculum out there, even right now, that's based around themes. And so a theme would be multi-age groups. So we could do a couple of ages. So I homeschooled my two sons, were just a year apart, and their cousin, Crystal. And that way we had a nice little group to do fun things with. So when you're building volcanoes, it's more fun if you've got three kids than just one or two.
Right.
And so the thematic unit was multi-age and multi-sensory, and that's how we got started.
That's awesome.
Well, I started, I've got three kids. My oldest two were boys. They were 13 months apart, so we've got a lot in common with that. And they went on into traditional public school. We were big believers in public school. My husband and I were both products of public school. And we also had a baby girl that had come along when the oldest one was, I think, in kindergarten. Anyway, we so we had the three kids. The two boys, there were things. I was very, very involved in their school setting. And, you know, I volunteered. I was that mom, the homeroom mom. You know, I was all that. And I don't know, things, they had to change schools at one point. And things start, as they got older, we started noticing some things with the middle child, the second little boy. He was, you know, and the teacher was really pushing the ADD stuff. And he was so smart. He was so outgoing. He was, I mean, you know, and I thought, I don't know. I just had some reservations about some of her suggestions. And we thought it was because of him, really, and some other things. things that were not related to learning styles and stuff. I just kind of thought, oh, we're going to pull out and I'm going to have some geniuses on my hands. You know, it's going to all be easy because I know what I'm doing. I researched and we pulled out around Thanksgiving of their second, third grade year. And it didn't take me long to go, oh, there's something going on. These are some smart kiddos. But I had this, one of the well-known boxed, you know, very structured curriculum with the workbooks and the charts and the desks. I had my schoolroom all set up and I had these two boys that would do anything to avoid a worksheet.
Right.
And an 18-month-old that's, you know, banging on the chalkboard as she's doing her. And it was a disaster. Mm. And so anyway, God sent a homeschool mom my way. Mm. A veteran mom with a whole bunch of kids who just talked to me one day because I was falling apart on the road going, I don't care how much money it costs, we're going to put them in. And she just talked me back from that ledge and really the first one to kind of give me permission to, I had read all about de-schooling, I understood that, but putting it into practice is really hard until you have somebody that's, you know, experience some success,
right?
Kind of giving you permission to do it. And she said, honey, you shouldn't. No. Put those books aside. You guys have to figure out how to be together.
Yeah.
And I just felt like I could start breathing again during our conversation. It was wonderful. And so I started, you know, learning about unit studies and five in a row, and absolutely loved that sort of thing. And so anyway, learning more about how they learned, I had one with auditory perception issues. Mm-hmm. The other one was more like dyslexia and ADHD. And he later tested out for some of those things. And, and so then the baby girl had her own little challenges, but she just learned right along with them.
Right.
And anyway, they all compensated very well. We didn't do remediation at all. But I learned that I needed to get learning in the back through the back door with them most of the time.
That's a great way to describe that.
We would do our things that, you know, I learned how to use a part of my brain that had been lying dormant, I think, for a long time, because it was that left side. You know, that left side is the side that I used. You know, I was the list maker. I had to learn to use the creative side when it came to their learning. And it just, you know, half the time they didn't know they were learning. And so anyway, we started in second and third grade. Both the boys graduated from home life. Baby girl ended up going a couple of years to a private high school. But then she came back to home to finish out. About 17 years of homeschooling for me. And it was very successful. The boys are now, I think they're 33 and 32, and she's 25. And they're all, you know, doing great. Boys went to the military. None of them went to college. I'm a college grad. My husband, too. None of them wanted to go. The boys went military. She went, you know, dental assistant. And now she's a stay-at-home mom. And, so, you know, we just had to be open to what was right for them. And even though the structured methods worked for me and I loved it worked for them, we had to go back to the drawing board. And so I got a lot of experience. Sometimes I didn't feel good about it's like when you're wired the way I was, you know, if you're not doing it in this structured, orderly way, you feel like you're somehow not getting things done. But I really learned through experience and through, we did five in a row. I did five in a row with my little girl for her first almost a year. And I started getting nervous about it and started thinking, I need to go to something structured. Got a structured curriculum, looked at the scope and sequence. We had already covered everything that was in there.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So that's just, that's our story. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. So you, I mean, you both really approached it with a little bit of structure, but also not so much, you know, structure that it turned your kids off from the the excitement of learning. And, you know, I hear my story within your story. That's kind of how we started too. It was a disaster in the public, well, private school for us. And it was a forced situation. And we did go to more of the thematic unit type studies because it allowed my kids to learn without knowing they were learning, and it was very successful on both parts.
When you can do them all together, you know, regardless of their age, you know, that's always real helpful.
Exactly. So I see we have some viewers popping on. Just know that you can be part of our conversation. This is why we are live. And so if you just want to say where you're watching from, I know some of you just turn us on and watch from afar while you're feeding your kids lunch and other things. So don't feel like you're pressured to have to say anything. But if you have a question, want to be part of the conversation, we would love for you to do that. So otherwise, we got questions we can chat about too. And we're happy that you're just along for the ride with us too. So I know there's pretty much two ways to approach homeschooling out and about, by planning an activity and by spontaneously learning just by embracing what's there in front of you. So let's start the conversation by talking a little bit about what's usually easier, and that's the planning one, and planning ahead for learning activities. Do either of you have any tips on how to make those learning activities most successful when families go out for a learning activity and they kind of know this is where we're going, this is what we want to do, this is what we want to get out of it?
Yeah, I'll start off because just because I have that kind of teacher background.
Okay, yes.
Me in this direction is the first thing I would always do is just look up, and I've lived in about four different states. So I just kind of look up the state standards, and then you can scroll down, like in Tennessee, you can go to Tennessee.gov's curriculum standards. And then you can find, like, in third grade, fourth grade, what are the, like, broad topics that they're going to be learning. So I just checked today, just this morning before we got on, and in Tennessee, in third grade and fourth grade, they do biology and animal science and ecosystems. Okay. So that's a broad topic, but it that's science.
Yeah.
And so if you know that, and say you have a third, fourth, and fifth grader, or whatever, you know, pick around that age range. That's what I did with my children when I was in elementary school. And then I just think animal science. I just think on it. I think ecosystems. Right. So you just, when you're in the grocery store, wherever you are, whatever, running errands, you just pick up this and find these things. And so even scrolling through the TV, I would find documentaries. Through bookstores, I would find books.
Right, yeah.
The library, check out a whole stack of them. And so you just kind of get that on your mind.
Yeah.
So that, like Phyllis and I've talked about a lot, you know, just playing. And so you don't say, okay, this, you know, today we're going to learn animal science for your school curriculum. It's just like, hey, let's see if we can find some animal tracks. And so you've got a plan, but the children don't have to know it. You know, they don't have
to. Yes, that's a good point.
So I found that to be really successful because they knew when we sat down and did a math workbook that we were doing school, but otherwise, you know, they really didn't know they were doing school. So literature, language arts, science, history, social studies, geography, all that was just playing and exploring, and it was just fun. So in my mind, if I knew sort of the overall standard, and I don't mean breaking them down by the 100 standards in science, but if I knew the topic for the year, then I could cover that topic. And And I'll just say this, this is not a very, it's a chancy thing to say.
Be brave. We say that a lot. We say a lot of those things on this show. I just had a guest of a couple months ago that said we didn't need a transcript. So, so no, go for it.
I've been public school, private school, and homeschooling. And I will tell you that for you moms out there, if you're homeschooling, and you are doing, giving it your best, and you're inundating your children with all kinds of learning experiences, if you don't even have a curriculum, but they're reading, and you're reading to them, and you're just constantly learning together, they're going to learn twice as much as they would if they're in a classroom, especially a public school classroom, sitting there memorizing facts, taking the test, and then after they take the test, they've forgotten it. Because these learning experiences that are integrated with life and they're meaningful, they remember them and they connect.
They do. Yeah.
And so I can talk to my adult sons and they can still remember the things that we did.
Exactly.
You know, during those experiences. Mm-hmm. I have one little story.
Sure.
I'll share this with you. Doing animal science, that was in third and fourth grades. I had two third graders and one fourth grader because I had my niece. Mm-hmm. We went to the National Park, DeSoto National Park. And so as part of the planning, I had a couple of books like Peterson Field Guides on animals, animal tracks, what are the signs of animals. I also had some children's little biology coloring books. And so we took that. So to prepare and to plan, everybody had a backpack. We always took snacks, water. They always had their colored pencils and a sketchbook and a journal. So we took all that stuff and they just grab your backpack. Let's go. We're going to go to the national park. So that, again, I'm not saying we're going to go do science.
Right.
So we were looking for hair, like on wire fences and tracks, animal tracks we could draw and animal dung. I have different signs. And so my older son, who was the know-it-all, little country boy, thought he knew everything. He said, wow, I think I found some really cool waffles. And his cousin, who was a little girl, lived in the city, said, that's not rocks. And she had her guide out. That looked like beaver dung. It is not. I would know if that was beaver dung. It is not. I'll prove it. And I'm going, wait. It is beaver dung.
Oh, no.
So we made a whole like storytelling time where they sat down and wrote their story about the day. And then we go back and I kind of look at grammar and spelling and we pick that out to try to use it as a language arts lesson. And so it was fun. And it's a memory that they will have forever. But it was so many different objectives and standards were covered while we were in the National Forest.
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah. I never once pulled up the state standards. I don't see it. I do not want to see it. It just made me, I don't know, I couldn't do it. So I didn't look at that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted us to be, for the first few years, I was definitely, well, if we go back into school, I want them to be able to get right in there, you know, and, but the more I constantly was working on my philosophy, I was listening to others that were sort of along the same mindset as I was. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of support through Five in a Row was a lifesaver for me because back then I didn't know where the homeschoolers were. And I knew they were out there, but I didn't know where they were really.
And, right.
I didn't know anybody else that had kids quite like mine, you know, their kids so studious and all of this. And I'm like, I got a bunch of here. So I was just like, I wouldn't even share, you know, what life was really like at my house. But the five in a row folks had a couple of message boards where the topics were always about natural learning and gentle things and, of course, unit studies and how to make a unit study out of anything, basically. And so I got a lot of support through that, and I just learned to not worry about it. I knew that. I always loved having like some life packs, Alpha Omega life packs on hand, just for those times that I would hit times when I would think, oh my goodness, even me as mom, I'm like, I don't know what I just didn't feel like we were doing enough. So I would pull out the life pack for a couple of weeks, you know, and then I would go, you know, I think after a couple of weeks of, you know, trying to focus on the work, I think we're doing fine. Let's put those guys.
Yeah.
They were kind of my safety net for my little orderly brain.
Right.
I just really learned, I've really grasped onto unschooling and the philosophies there and how you can take any activity. I mean, I tell people all the time, you tell me any like wholesome family activity that you're doing, I can pretty much give you educational categories.
Yeah.
And as a counselor, that's a lot of what I do a lot of times is help families that think they're not doing anything, help them realize they are and how to put that into a formal grade reporting program. But, we ran the gamut. And a lot of times, if we had a field trip that we could do, that's what we did. And sometimes I would know ahead of time and I could do a little prep. Sometimes I didn't. And we would go with it. And then we might do some follow up. You know, I loved black books. They didn't so much love them, but I did. And I would do, you know, I would just kind of lead them in doing some. And and now I still have some of their lap books. And it's the neatest thing.
That's cool. You know, that we have
it. And so it's just seeing the things that they would learn, you know, just by doing, because I had some extremely hands-on kids. And, you know, with the wide age group, those hands-on activities, they translate down to all of the ages. And so anyway, we would go to the grocery store, and when you have three kids that you're taking to the grocery store and they're like age 9 and on down, it's, you know, you better have something kind of in your little bag, or there's going to be fights in the aisles and no telling what. And so I used, I had a little book that I used a lot, and it was Grocery Cart Math. That's one of the resources that we share. It's called Grocery Cart Math, and it's got a lot of different levels of just things that you can do at the grocery store. And so it's like, okay, you know, when the boys got big enough where I could kind of give them their own list. And you can just, there are always ways you can build on it just to give them something to focus on so you can go to the grocery store. And it's all beneficial. And so like, and if we would wake up and it'd be a nice pretty day outside, I would go, guys, we're going to the zoo. We would drive to Memphis and go to the zoo. It's a good 70 miles away. And we would pack up the cooler and we would head to the zoo. And I had this resource called, we didn't have to have any, you don't have to have a worksheet for everything. But we would take our sketchbooks, and we were there enough that we would tend to pick a different, you know, it's like today, let's hang out in front of the seals and let's just watch them for as long as we want to, or the bears, you know, whatever we kind of want to sit and just watch for a longer period of time. And we would take our sketchbooks, and I would take this Considering God's Creation. It's got this full of reproducibles that you can pull out, and it's for animals. And it was something that we used a lot. It would ask you, where is this, you know, animal from? And so there was some geography involved, and it was, what do they eat and what classification are they? And you can do as much or as little of that as you want to. But it was really something that gave us a little bit of focus, you know, that, and I was, you know, my kids often wouldn't think of their activities as school, but because they had come out of public school, and sometimes they would say, I miss my friends, you know, I would often tell them, hey, y'all know that what we're doing right now is school, right? I mean, your friends back at school, you know what they're doing? They're sitting at their desk right now. Look what you're doing. You know, so I would always remind them, listen, y'all, this fun stuff we're doing right now, this is school. And so, anytime we had an opportunity to get out and go, that's what we did. It's funny because I helped start a homeschool group in the area, and we would, you know, people would say, we're wanting to do a park day or wanting to do this and that. And I finally had to say, look, we were going every day somewhere doing something. And I finally said, if somebody would like do an English class, we would be there. I felt bad calling it homeschooling sometimes because we were never home. We were just doing all good stuff. It was all family, you know, building your family, bonding things. And the planning for me was, if we were reading about something that they kind of enjoyed, then I might try to plan a field trip or something like that. And for me, it was more about journaling on the back end. That's what kind of helped me feel a little bit better. It started giving me something I could actually look and go, okay, we really have been doing school, you know, and because I could just make my little list of things we had done and kind of the educational categories those things fell into. So for me, it was kind of a flip side.
Right, of what Trudy was doing, where she's looking at the categories and then doing the activities, where you're doing the activities and then making the categories out of what you did.
Yeah.
You're still documenting, but you're doing after the fact instead of before the fact. Right. The same thing. And I have actually suggested that to several parents because they'll say, well, we're doing speech therapy and occupational therapy and we're doing all these things, but I can't seem to get school in.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Exactly.
Just talking. In occupational therapy, if they're working on pencil grip and writing, then that's your writing class.
That's right.
Therapy, they're working on phonics and letters. Well, that's your reading class, you know. So they're, that takes the pressure off.
Exactly. It's just how you approach it. There's, you know, no either way is better. Sometimes necessity forces that, but then it's also your teaching style, which the two of you show can work perfectly well either way. And I love that. So Trudy and Phyllis are going to share a bunch of resources because Phyllis tapped into some of those, and I will have that list on our YouTube channel later after we're done with the program. And I also wanted to say hi to Harbor, who is watching from Hawaii, and she's watching on Facebook right now. So Phyllis, I know Phyllis, you mentioned this, and it may be something my viewers are not even familiar with, but can you talk about lap books and what actually they are?
Lap books are just kind of a fun way. It's like a craft. If you're very crafty, you might really enjoy lap books. So we used these with some of our 5-in-a-row books that we did. And so basically you take like a folder, and there are websites. You can Google this too, lap booking. Like for instance, when we did Homer Price. Homer Price was one of the books from Beyond 5-in-a-row, and it was a little chapter book. That's when they graduate to chapter books. And Homer Price, there are different kind of adventures for each chapter. And so what you do is you make your little cover, and it's just an overall thing about Homer Price. But then like the different things you learn about, you make a little mini. You just put something in there, just like when you learn about, of course we did one thing with Homer Price, learned about melodramas, and we actually made a melodrama. It was really fun. It started a whole video passion for my boys.
Oh, wow.
Great or something like that. It was hilarious. It was hilarious. And but anyway, that one didn't go in the lap book. But some of the different things, I can't remember now what some of the concepts were that we learned about. But for each one, you do a little, it's like you just make something and it goes inside the lap book. And so then when you open up your lap book later, you see all these things that they learned about.
Very visual. Yeah.
And it's very visual. And so.
And tactile too, right?
Yeah. Yes. And it's a record. It's a record, you know, of what you've done. And for me, I absolutely love having something that shows, you know, something to show for what we did. It's not required that you should, you know, my kids could have cared less really about doing that book, but I enjoy them. You know, it's not required, you know, but it's a fun way to do, you know.
It's a creative way.
It's a creative way
to document what they're doing.
And I've got, you know, my daughter, we did Madeline. That was another 5-year-old book. Still got that lap book somewhere. She was just kindergarten. But, you know, you learned about the Eiffel Tower. And so you do a little picture of the Eiffel Tower, and you open it up. And it says Eiffel Tower is in Paris, you know. And it's just little facts. And, you know, I think we might have done that for Ping, the story of Ping too. I can't remember the Yangtze River. So you put a little map where's the Yangtze River, and that's one of your little mini sections. But it's just a fun way to kind of pull it together.
Right.
And there's nothing structured or orderly that as you learn about these different things, you you know, there's no real plan.
Right.
It's just you kind of just do it as you come to it. And that's what I love about timelines too, honestly, for history. A lot of subjects, and you pull me if I get off into the...
This is really good. I love documents.
A lot of subjects don't have to be done in a particular order.
Right. Yes.
Math needs to be done in a particular order.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you're learning to read, that probably needs to be done in a particular order. But science does not have to be done in a particular order. History does not either. Geography, it doesn't have to be done in a particular order. So if you will use maps and timelines and just like ongoing, like for all of, as long as you can get it to last, have a timeline notebook, and when it wears out, every time you come across, like when we would read and we would come across somebody who actually did exist, sometimes even the made up characters, if we knew kind of what time, what time frame they lived in, we would put them on the timeline. And then as you come to other historical things that happen and you put them on your timeline, you start to pull together.
Right, to create those connections.
Lots of connections. Connections is the key to this.
Yes.
Connections is absolutely doing these experiences. Trudy and I talked about this recently. Having these experiences is what we hang new information on.
Yes.
It's like hooks.
So true.
Mm-hmm. And we hang that new information on it. If you don't have much experience, it's sometimes kids have trouble finding a hook to hang their new information on.
And it's just learning isolated bits and pieces of information where...
Exactly. That's why we forget them so easily, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the same with vocabulary. You can increase your vocabulary when it's connected to something. You know?
Yes.
So all those connections and integrated. I mean, what we're talking about is integrated studies. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you can teach science to a third, fourth and fifth grader the same subject because there is no order.
Yeah.
And then the next year you can, flip it and go look at a different grade level. But that's why you can do multi-age teaching with a variety of subjects. So, and then it makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm.
One of the, again, if we're interjecting.
Yeah, too much. Oh, yeah, no, go. Go for it.
I do with planning. I also taught after my children, I taught my niece, who has also severe dyslexia, and her friend, my neighbor, both girls, teenagers, did not like, one of them really just struggled to read and was very much against it. The other one didn't like to read, had poor comprehension. So that's in high school. So we're doing state history. We lived in Mississippi. So we're doing Mississippi history. So I thought, okay, how can I get these girls to read and to want to learn, you just sit down and go,
Ring.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to read it all to them. So we decided to go take a trip down Highway 61, which is the Delta in Mississippi. It goes from the top of Mississippi all the way down Mississippi River. And this is the kind of things I would do. I'd stop at a local bookstore and see about local authors. I'd stop at a local music store and see who are the musicians in this area?
Right.
Who are the actors and actresses that came from Mississippi? And so I got them hooked in with the arts.
Yeah.
And that's where they learned history and literature accidentally.
Because,
teenagers were all about the arts. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things we did is to get them to read, and I'm not a proponent of ghost stories, but the teenage girls, that was kind of intriguing to them. So we stopped at a local bookstore and got some a book on ghost stories. And I actually got the map out. And so they had to learn mapping skills. And so they figured out how to find the directions to get to this cemetery where this author was buried. So we went to the cemetery. And so while they're sitting there in the cemetery in the middle of the day, under the shade trees, it's real quiet. I was reading the ghost story to them.
Oh.
And there was nobody in the cemetery except I saw the landscape guy walking up behind him. And they screamed in my office. Real is this, So then after we got in the car and we're headed down Highway 61 to go to some more, we went to Ground Zero where Morgan Freeman has his restaurant and the Delta Museum to see where some of these blues musicians got started. But anyway, my niece with severe dyslexia that hated the thought of reading started reading the ghost stories to us. They were just little short stories. Uh-huh. And she'd read them. Mm-hmm. And then her friend, when she would come across a word that she couldn't read, she'd say, "What is this, Alex?" And Alex would tell her, and she would keep reading. So I was just stunned at how the reading sort of naturally happened, because I got him intrigued and interested. Mm-hmm. And so we would stop at, we would hit a town, and we might go to the internet cafe and do some research about that town. We would go to City Hall and ask for brochures and flyers. Yeah. We would just research as we went. And it was great to engage them, like I said, in history, literature, and the arts, without them realizing we were having school.
Yeah, and doing it in order, if you're just kind of, you know, marking things on the map, putting things on the top of the map, you know, you're learning about literary devices, you know, you're learning about just different things, you're being exposed to this great, all this nice reading and stuff.
Right.
It does provide those connections so that later on, if they are doing a formal study in college or somewhere else,
they remember.
They've got all these experiences. Mm-hmm. Not so hard to find places to hang that new information.
Exactly.
Well, and I have to say, too, the mom, the teacher, needs to be having fun.
Definitely. Yes. That's part of self-care. We can't forget about ourselves.
Yeah, if it's fun to us, then it's fun to the kids. Yeah. And they get excited and motivated. Mm-hmm. And so then it takes a lot of that stress that I think a lot of parents feel, that stress and that burden of trying to educate their children. And if they can just enjoy it and realize that the kids are learning so much more than they would be sitting in a desk in school, then I think they can relax and just get out and have a good time with it.
Mm-hmm. That's
yeah, there is a good, I've got a link now. I don't know if I included it or not, but I can send it to you. Don't let me forget. It's about children learning through play. Did I put that in there? Mm-hmm. I don't think I did. It's play. Rethinking how we educate our children. It's it's not a TED Talk, but it's similar to it's a YouTube video.
Okay.
And she does this whole lecture on play and how educational play is, and how we try to put it into this category of, well, it's just play.
Right.
It's super important. Play is, we all learn through play. Adults learn through play.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just, I don't know, it's great. And so it's in that information too.
Okay. That we shared. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we kind of touched a little bit on the spontaneity part. Is there anything else that you two want to add to that? But just being spontaneous while we're out and about.
Just being willing to, and not feeling like it's an interruption. Don't feel like it's an interruption. Yeah. It's a very important part of, you know, teaching your kids and or allowing them to learn. You're not so much teaching them, you're allowing them to learn. Because let's face it, at the end of the day, we all say this and we mean it. It's not about teaching the facts. We can't teach all the facts. It's not possible. Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's about creating kids who are lifetime learners.
Yes.
And when it's torture, they're not going to do it. You know, they need to realize that learning isn't, you know, contradictory to enjoying your life. You know, it can all go together.
Well, it's also learning to make the most of the moment. So when something, a current event happens, actually, in teacher education, they teach teachers to do this, but they rarely do it. But, you know, the moment, whatever happens in the moment. And so there are going to be good days and bad days. And so they're going to be, what if you, you know, what, I don't know. Like, I remember the war in Afghanistan, not Afghanistan, Kuwait. Okay, so that was on the morning news. And so whatever I had planned sort of for that day, we stopped everything. Is Kuwait, and we get start looking at what kind of government do they have, and why do they have having a war over there, and all the learning that can go centered around that. And so I think that's also very important in being spontaneous. So you have a plan, but you don't always stick to your plan, and you should be able to plan A and a plan B and a plan C. And so whatever happens in the moment in that day, that it, take advantage of that.
It kind of helps them learn priorities too, you know. Reinforce priorities with them, and that's so important to do. Allow yourself to be spontaneous, you know. Just allow it. That's what I would encourage families.
We have a viewer that said a lot of homeschool parents consider themselves learning partners. Many modern curriculums use that term. And I think that's what you guys are really talking about is when you do bring those things up, we don't know it either. And so we're learning along with our kids, and it just improves us. It improves our children. And it's like you said, it takes advantage of those learning opportunities right in front of us.
Well, for example, I've lived in Mississippi my entire life, and I did not know that we had such an enormous amount of famous people from our state, artists, authors, poets, actresses, you know, I had no idea. I mean, I've heard of them, Elvis and Oprah, but and so that, yes, I was a learning partner. I was learning just as much as the girls were, and it was so much fun.
We did a Little House on the Prairie tour because we lived up in Minnesota. So we followed the path that the family, you know, took when Laura was writing her stories, and then stayed, you know, in the areas where their houses were, actually walked where the dugout was. Oh my goodness. I was like, I lived in the winter in Minnesota, and then I thought there was no way I would survive in that space because it was so small. But yes, you know, you totally understand the context when you experience it and you're there. Mm-hmm. And that, again, it's those things that your kids will never forget. And you too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So important. So, you know, we probably got a lot of parents that are fearful in teaching this way because they're going to say, well, my child's going to have learning gaps. How do we, you know, handle that if we don't always use a textbook or a workbook or a specifically designed curriculum, especially for a struggling student?
Yeah. You know, learning gaps are a real thing. But they're everywhere, you know. I mean, if you use a box curriculum or public schools, for instance, let's take public schools. They if they have a, you know, certain curriculum that they use, and at some point they make a change or something gets updated or whatever, there's going to be a learning gap. If a child moves and has to change schools, there's going to be a learning gap. Learning gaps are real. The key is not to be afraid of those. It's you know, learning gaps are going to take place, but you know, is the gap in not learning the same number of factoids that the, you know, that somebody else learned? If that's the worry, then I wouldn't worry about that at all. You know, but you know, as they learn the factoids, they're going to forget the factoids, you know. You know, it just, knowing where to go and find answers is 10 times more important than, you know, having taken, memorized all the same lists and all the same dates and names as, you know, counterparts and things like that. And so I think, you know, I hate families to kind of feel that way. I know that that is a real struggle. It just, my encouragement usually to families is just, you know, gaps are going to be there no matter what. And so if it's okay for it to happen in the public school system, then it's okay for it to happen with you. And
Well, I will tell you, when I started out, it's kind of like what Dillis was talking about, alluding to earlier, when I started out homeschooling, I had that same fear. Because what if I need to put them back in school and they're going to be a year behind, or they're not going to know what all the other kids know. And so I was real rigid at first. Like, I was doing my Saxon math and we did X number of minutes a day and whatever. We finished by Christmas. And I thought, oh, I've done finished by Christmas. What did I do wrong? So I bought a different math curriculum of the same grade and made him do that. In school, they're there, I don't know how many hours, but they're all these other kids. And so math takes a whole hour. In our house, we might I could do it in 15 or 20 minutes. And so that's how we zoomed through it. And then I realized they did get it. And so the first couple of years, I did a little achievement test. I went to the local private school and I got them hooked up, take a little achievement test. And when I realized they were in the 99th percentile every single time, what am I doing this for? And so I stopped doing it. And I realized that, like I said earlier, they're going to get a whole lot more just for being home with me and having conversations 24/7 about whatever we're learning than sitting in a classroom for 6 or 7 hours. And so, but for parents that are afraid of that, you could do a little achievement test if you feel the need for it. For parents that are just committed to homeschooling, it's really a useless endeavor.
And mine were terrible test takers.
Yeah, and you might not get a good score.
We did a time or two just so that we could say, you know, that they'd done it. But I was just like, oh, we're not doing that anymore. Well, you know,
because
we're terrible at it.
Yeah.
We're terrible at it. And so, you know, it just kind of depends, you know. I have one friend who she worried because their only science that they had done all year was Magic School Bus. That's the only science. And she was, and we were both signed up and we were both met up there with the kids to do achievement testing through the little umbrella school. And she was like, she was just nervous to death.
Oh,
find out her kids scored better on their science.
That's what I'm
that
talking
year
about.
Than ever. I mean, okay, that put that fear to rest. All they had done was magic.
So sometimes you do have to do that just to get it in your mind.
Exactly. That's a good point. And really, they're rather inexpensive, and it'll teach your kids how to take tests. But, you know, and there are some states that it is required. And I mean, we lived in a state that it was required, and I was never surprised by what my kids got on their tests because. I already knew. But it helps you get over those fears the first couple of times.
And then if you're homeschooling, it really doesn't matter if you're keeping up with everybody else. It really doesn't matter if they're on a certain grade level in every subject, the same grade level. None of that stuff. I mean, the end goal is to make them functional, healthy, productive adults. And so if it takes less years, more years...
And look, here's something that I say a lot to parents. I work mainly with high school families at this point for 11th grade, with struggling learners or students on the modified path or certificate of completion path. That's our non-diploma path. And sometimes they're really concerned about, if I gear our schooling toward what he needs now, you know, he might not be ready, you know, he might not be able to do some of the things I want him to do later. But the fact of the matter is, what he needs today is what he needs today.
Exactly.
And
yes.
So I always encourage them, you know what, you got to deal with the child that is in front of you right now. And so when you do that, you just have to trust then, you know, there is a little bit of trust that's involved in this. It is a leap of faith. It is a walk of faith. It is, you know, we don't have all the answers. I felt very, I felt a kinship to Abraham, honestly, when I was homeschooling. I didn't know how it was going to end. I didn't know. I just didn't know how it was going to go. I just knew that I knew God had put us on this path. I felt that it was what we were supposed to be doing. And so we just kept moving forward in faith. And there were times I thought, this is the greatest thing ever. You know, look at my children. They're going out to check the mail together. Look at those two boys. Look at them. And then 2 minutes later, when they were in fisticuffs on the front lawn, I was like, what am I doing? You deal with the situation you have. You know, if you need to inspire love of learning in your student, this is really just the best way.
Yes.
And the rest will fall into place. You know, your child has been gifted with the things that God feels like they need.
Exactly. He always provides. It's always there. It goes back to what you guys were talking about before, is being in the moment. I mean, we can actually detract that by our plans versus taking advantage of what we have in front of us. So important. Okay. Yeah. So one other hard question. What about parents who have to have grades and report cards and transcripts? How can they do this type of learning and still fulfill those requirements?
You know, if you're enrolled with Home Life Academy, we require that you put your courses into our grade reporting system, and we, you know, require grade reporting and you know, and then in high school, it's credits and all of that. So, but I help families every day. We have a couple of us counselors who help families every day who are doing this non-structured, non-traditional type of schooling, figure out titles. Course titles in the different categories, and how to apply credits to that. If they're not in high school, credits aren't a worry. Mm-hmm. You would just, you know, it's like, honestly, you know, no matter what somebody's doing, the type of things that Trudy was talking about, that where they go out and they're taking their animal track books and they're, that's nature science, you know, nature science. That's a science. The unschooling handbook is one of the best resources for kind of figuring out how to. It's one of the things I latched onto very early on, and I recommend it all the time, and it's on the list.
Awesome.
But it helps you figure out how to take these experiences and put it into educational speak. Educationese, I think that's what they call it.
Using the right language.
Yeah. And so, once you kind of get your brain wired to doing that,
right.
It's easy. Yeah. And then you give grades based on, you know, for me in my world, A means excellent. This is the old timey, grading scale. Mm-hmm. B is above average, C is average, and D is below average. And so that's how I would give grade. It depends on what I want to measure. What is it that I want to measure? And so for me, it was rarely about measuring the facts. It was about, you know, other things, lots of other things. But sometimes it would be the facts. It would, you know, how interested are you? How much effort are you putting in?
Right.
That sort of thing. But yeah, there are definitely ways to do that. And, you know, we're available to help with stuff like that.
Yeah. You know? So I've got the website up for Home Life Academy. Can you talk a little bit about what Home Life Academy provides to homeschool families? And then Trudy, I'll have you go into.
We provide, of course, record keeping. In some states, we are a legal covering, you know, for homeschoolers, like in Tennessee, where we're located. One of the legal options for homeschooling in the state of Tennessee is you can either enroll as an independent homeschooler with your local school board, or you can use a church-related school like we are. And so we are a legal option. So most families are either going to enroll with the school board or they're going to enroll with a school like us. And so we provide that legal covering. And we do that in Tennessee, Florida, Alabama, South Carolina, Colorado. Okay, so we have 5 states where we are legal coverings. But even in the states where we are not, where we're not necessarily considered one of the options, we still provide the grade reporting. The record keeping is phenomenal. Because of the record keeping, we do transcripts. We will do a diploma. Our Life Academy issues a diploma when a student has met all the credit requirements. Our diplomas are accepted at the military academies, at the you know, Ivy League schools, at the, you know, wherever. We do wonderful transcripts. They can, I think, see an example even on our website of our diploma transcript. Just top notch. But one of the best things that we provide is the counseling services. Our counseling is it's so important. It's foundational to Home Life Academy. Record keeping is like one side and counseling is the other. And it's just so, it's really good. We like to leave families alone. They can roll with us. We're not going to bug you to death, but we want to be here for you if you need us. And so whether it's calling in and saying, my student won't do anything. I don't know. Or if it's helping you figure out for your high school student, what credits do they still need and how do I go about getting those? And we're an unschool family and how do I get, you know, how do I get this English credit when we're an unschool family? And so we can help with all of those things. We help our students get their scholarships. You know, we've had some president scholars. We've had, you know, we've got some really
ACT.
We've got an NCAA that's where that specializes in helping students stay eligible for NCAA.
Okay.
So they kind of counseling. We've got ACT accommodations counselor who helps families that need those special accommodations. ACT kind of helps them through the steps of that. Lots and lots of different things. And so there are so many ways that we serve families and that we can help you, even if you're not in a covering state.
Because it's just a helpful service for any homeschooler, even if your state doesn't require that. Yeah. So if you are interested in that, check out homelifeacademy.com.
Yeah, the website alone is packed full of resources. Yeah. Even if you don't enroll with us, our website is chock full of resources. So,
I think I featured you guys on a freebies blog that I put together. I'm like, I found a bonus. I was digging through all of our partners' websites and I was like, oh, I've got to highlight this and this. And you guys do have a lot of great resources there. And so, Trudy, I would love for you to talk a little bit about the Homeschool Care Foundation as well.
Okay. I'm the special ed consultant, I think is the title. And about the website, I've actually taken each category of exceptional needs, learning disabilities, ADHD, and so on, and tried to fill it with resources and information and academic kind of understanding about the disorder. But one of the things I do with homeschool care is a foundation. So it's a free service. And so the people that are members of HLA get, I think, three free consultations with me to help them work out things, maybe help them find resources, help them figure out how to go about, like we were talking about earlier, you know, they've got this child with all these disabilities and help them make it work. So I do that. The other thing, for people that are not a part of HLA, they can go on the Homeschool Care Foundation website and put in a request to talk with me and make an appointment, and I'll call them and just kind of help them. I really consider myself a problem solver. Most of the time is that parents are already doing the right things. They validated, like, yes, research, that's what research says you should be doing. It kind of helps alleviate some of those fears, I think, that we were talking about earlier. We also have equipment, all kinds of for kids with special needs that's available for loan or for free. We also have the Phyllis Lero Foundation.
Mason Lero Memorial Scholarship. Mason Lero Memorial Scholarship.
Provides scholarship kind of funding money for kids, military families that have a child with exceptional needs that's medical usually.
Look for the most, you know, the greatest need, you know, the most severely affected situations to try to help with. And it used to be only for military families. Now it's preference to military families, but we actually accept applications for any homeschool family that has a special needs child, like us. And so we gave away over $4,000, I think, last year. This is named after my grandson, Mason. He was a miracle boy, and he was with us for 4 years. And it's an inspirational story, and his story is there on the website too.
Thank you, ladies, for both what you do and how you encourage homeschool families, and just for what you've shared in this last hour. It has been it's been a really good conversation, because you really, I think, put a lot of hope and peace and to families' hearts about this whole homeschooling thing. A lot of times we can make it so much more work than it is. And you two have really shared from your heart and your own struggles and just how relaxed we can be and to just take advantage of what God puts in front of us and around us. And so thank you for sharing.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, we've enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been
one of my favorite things to talk about.
So. Yeah. Oh, and I want to reiterate the Homeschool Care Foundation. That website is homeschoolcare.org. If you are interested in checking that out and you're listening to the podcast, and again, I will list Trudy and Phyllis's resources on the YouTube channel feed, and they'll also be listed in the podcast description once we get that. So posted. But thank you again, ladies. This was great. Thank you all for who joined us on this conversation too. Our viewers, we are glad to have you as part of this this discussion. Next week, we are not going to have a broadcast. It is a holiday week, and I'm actually going to be at a Johnny and Friends camp. and so there will be no broadcast, but the following week, we're going to have two. We're going to make up for it. We're going to be talking to one homeschool mom who has she's homeschooled through a lot, and we're going to talk about finding your inner teacher as we kind of wrap up this this theme for this month. Next month, July, has always been our SPED Homeschool Awareness Month, where we share community stories. And so our first guest is going to talk about finding your inner teacher when homeschool life sends you curveballs. She's had a lot. And I just encourage you to join us in for that conversation. And then that Thursday, we're also going to have a parent panel with some parents who have homeschooled through difficulties. And just, again, we're going to be focusing on that finding your inner teacher. And just that we all have it. It all doesn't look all the same. Just as Trudy and Phyllis sitting next to each other, we're so different. You guys really kicked off this theme for next month really well. we're given our children, and God makes us the way he does. And it's not surprising to him how we homeschool and teach our kids, because that's how he made us. And that's how he made our kids. So we just have to embrace it. And so thank you for sharing again. And thank you all for joining us. And just to let you know that this broadcast was sponsored by viewers like you. And if you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to SPED Homeschool, you can visit our website at spedhomeschool.com and click donate. So so thank you all. And thanks again, Trudy and Phyllis. And look forward to seeing you all in a couple weeks. Until then, happy 4th of July and God bless. Thanks, everybody.
Hello, I'm Adam Comer.
And I'm Ryan Chittister.
And we are the host of Life After Addiction podcast. What we believe is that addiction is not a surprise to God.
That's right. We discuss addiction from a biblical worldview and how true freedom comes through a personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
Absolute freedom from addiction, the secular worldview of once an addict, always an addict, is just not true. If you or someone you love struggles with addiction, subscribe to Life After Addiction at lifeaudio.com.